All right, shall I begin the next topic? Arne also wanted me to say something about the work that's being done by different people for an Arctic nuclear weapon-free zone. And here in Scandinavia, we're working very hard for a Scandinavian nuclear weapon-free zone as a first step. Well, one thing that happened was that in 2009, in August 2009, we had a meeting here in Copenhagen, a conference where we had experts coming from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, different parts of Europe, to discuss the possibility of an Arctic nuclear weapon-free zone. And one of the groups that collaborated in making this meeting was Danish Institute of International Studies, DIIS. The motive for wanting to make a zone like that is that with climate change, the commercial exploitation of the resources of the Arctic is becoming more and more possible. So there's a kind of race to go up there and to exploit the mineral resources, especially oil, and to use the open passage north of Canada to the Pacific and north of Russia also to the Pacific. And the danger is that there will be a militarization of the Arctic. And as it is now, submarines carrying nuclear weapons from Russia and USA sailing under the Arctic ice and have even collided with each other under the Arctic ice. Also, the ecology of the Arctic is very fragile, and the same with the culture of the indigenous people. And both these things need to be protected, and it's very hard to combine that with militarization and all-out commercial competition. And we have to choose the protection of the region and give it the highest priority. Well, this meeting that we had in 2009 was quite successful. I made a report for it, but also DIIS, they made their own report, and they, in fact, did a better job than I did. Distributed 300 copies of their report at the 2010 NPT Review Conference in New York. Well, another thing that has been done here in Denmark is that there was held a meeting of the opposition parties in Christiansborg on March 2010. And Margaret Vestager was there, Jeppe Kofod, Holger K. Nielsen, and some experts from other countries, and also other politicians from Denmark. And all of the people there were strongly in favor. All of the opposition parties were in favor of adopting an Arctic nuclear weapon-free zone as a common policy. So if we have an election and if the opposition comes into power, they will push for an Arctic nuclear weapon-free zone and with a Scandinavian zone as a first step. Then I was invited to a meeting of the Nordic Forum for Security Policy in 2010 in April in St. Petersburg. And this was organized by the Finnish Institute for Foreign Policy. And I gave a lecture there about these topics. But the wonderful thing that happened was that I met a Finnish member of parliament there called Christina Gestrin, and she promised to work with the subject in the Finnish parliament. She's quite an important person, in fact, the president of the Baltic Parliamentary Conference. So she promised to work more with this topic, and in fact, here I would like to send around, this is the thing that came out of it. It's a proposal that she made in the Nordic Council for Scandinavian nuclear weapon-free zone. Well, this happened while the NPT review conference was still going on, and some of the people at the conference wanted to get a proposal, a working paper, made very quickly, and to have the working paper submitted to the conference. And so we made very quickly this paper that reviewed the situation, and the history of the idea of the Nordic nuclear weapon-free zone was that it was originally proposed a long time ago, but only in 1980 it really was seriously considered. And this was mainly in Norway. And in fact, there was a bipartisan commission that made a report, and Gro Harlem Brundtland wrote the conditions that would be needed for Norway to. 1993, the Nordic Council went so far as to definitely recommend that there should be Nordic nuclear weapon-free zone. Well, unfortunately, the Berlin Wall fell at that time, and many people thought that the problem of nuclear weapons was no longer so acute. But this was wrong, of course, but the idea lost momentum. Well, now, however, the project of getting rid of nuclear weapons entirely is very much in the forefront, and it's time that the idea should be taken up again. Should we stop for a moment for questions? Absolutely, it could be an election issue. And I should mention that many people think that there's a problem because Denmark belongs to NATO. But there's an example in Central Asia of a nuclear weapon-free zone involving Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan and some other countries there. And they are in a treaty with Russia, a defense treaty with Russia, which is comparable to NATO. So it's an analog. And so the problem of NATO is really not a serious one.
What about Thule Air Force Base?
Yes.
It's in the Nordic Arctic area, but it's without our... We cannot say to the Americans, you don't have a nuclear weapon anymore, because we have decided in our Nordic parliament that we don't want them.
Yeah.
But the Americans, they say just, oh, we don't mind. We have our base. Still, we will still have our base in Greenland. What can we do?
Ever since 1957, Denmark has had the policy that it did not allow nuclear weapons anywhere on Danish territory, and that's also including Greenland. And there was a big scandal, some people call it Thulegate. So if you look on Google under Thulegate, you've got all the literature about it. And the scandal was that, in fact, in spite of this ruling that Denmark had, that nowhere on Danish territory could there be nuclear weapons. There were nuclear weapons stored in Thule at the air base, and there were routine flights by the bombers carrying nuclear weapons over the pole, sort of in the direction of Russia, to sort of to practice what they might do. And one of these flights, the plane crashed and the nuclear weapons were spread out all over the ice. And then the Greenlanders were recruited to go and clean it up. And these Greenlanders near Thule were not told about the radiation danger. They were just told to go and clean up the mess. And many of them later suffered from radiation damage, and they have tried and tried to get compensation for that and failed. So that's a scandal, and I think that the opposition parties in Denmark would like to do better in the future and be really sure. The Americans, by the way, apologized, but Denmark now is, and especially I think the opposition parties, determined that something like that will not happen again. Actually, most of the countries of the world live in atom weapon-free zones. There are 121 countries that live in atom weapon-free zones. And the most important ones are the Treaty of Tlatelolco, I think it's pronounced, which covers all of South America and Mexico. Then there's a treaty that covers the Pacific, including Australia and New Zealand. Then there's a treaty that covers Africa that's newly come into force. There's a treaty in Asian, Southeast Asia, nuclear weapon-free zone. Then, as mentioned, there's one in Central Asia, the Semipalatinsk treaty.
You should be more eager to stress this point, that yes. That is normal, and yes. It's unnormal that we do not have it.
Yes, that's exactly what the aim is, to make the nuclear weapons seem abnormal, right? Like a disease, something we have to get rid of. Yeah, that's the aim. Actually, what one would like to achieve is a nuclear weapons convention, something like the Chemical and Biological Weapons Convention, prohibiting the possession and manufacture and of course use of nuclear weapons, making it illegal to have them. There, a lot of work is being done for a nuclear weapons convention, but in the meantime we can go step by step with the nuclear weapon-free zones. Yeah, actually, the situation is very serious if you look at the fissile material, because during the Cold War, people worked very, very hard to manufacture it. The amount of material that can be used to make nuclear weapons is very large, and a lot of it is in the former Soviet Union, and a lot of it is not adequately protected. So there's a very real danger that this material will go through the mafia and end up in the either hands of organized crime or terrorists. So it's a dangerous situation. Just to add something to that, Obama has said many things and made many promises and not fulfilled so many of them. But one thing that he has done is to give quite a bit of money to the project of trying to make it a little more safe, the conditions under which this huge amount of dangerous material is stored. This is a very big point on the agenda. People want very much to make the Middle East a nuclear weapon-free zone. And in order to do that, they would have to offer Israel some kind of guarantee for its security. Israel right now is relying on the nuclear weapons as a kind of last resort in case it would be attacked with a superior number of conventional weapons. So in order to get Israel to get rid of its nuclear weapons, I think it would be necessary to offer them some kind of security guarantees. I have worked with the Pugwash conferences for many years and had the privilege of knowing the leader of the movement, Sir Joseph Rotblat, and he made it clear. The movement and Rotblat were both given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1995. And in his acceptance speech, Rotblat made it clear that in order to really get rid of nuclear weapons, one would have to get rid of war itself. He's always said that. And the reason for it is that if you had, suppose that you got rid of them, you had none, and then the big conflict broke out, the knowledge of how to make them would still be there. And during the conflict, they could be recreated. So he believes that the real cure is to get rid of war as an institution. And my own personal belief is that to do that, we have to strengthen United Nations and make it into a federation. I think that the rich countries at the moment opposed to giving the United Nations the power of taxation because they're afraid of losing their privileged position. And I think that that's a link between the problem of war and the problem of poverty. So long as we have this huge, huge gap between the rich and poor countries, it's difficult to persuade the rich countries to give more power to the UN, and especially the power of taxation. One thing that has been proposed is the Tobin tax. The Tobin tax is a tax, a very small tax, on currency transactions. And it would actually give the United Nations enough money to do many things. But the United States says that if the Tobin tax is instituted, they will withdraw from UN. And I think that they should give UN the Tobin tax, and if USA wanted to withdraw, let them. I think that economic system is the root of many of the problems that we're facing today, and that it needs reform. And that as time goes on, it will become more and more clear that it needs reform. The problem is that if you just have the free market and you say whatever the market does is holy, we will not interfere with the free market, then you're asking for environmental catastrophe, because just the aim of making profit is lacking both the dimension of ethics and the dimension of ecology. So we need to rebuild our economics, first of all, so that it will not depend on growth. We're coming soon to the limits of growth. So we need to turn it into some kind of steady state economics, and then we also have to give it both an ecological and a ethical dimension.